Vigo. The hour has come to bring a close to 2 days of debating. It is fair to say, Mr. Speaker, that over the last 2 days, I have spent some time to reflect on the procedure that we used for the presentation of the annual budgetary statement, as well as the debate that follows. And one thing is really clear, that is that attempting to debate the entire budget in 2 days needs rethinking. I have seen evidence of great tiredness on the part of honorable members. But more than that, it is that one occasion in the parliamentary year where honorable members really ought to be unfettered, except, of course, within the confines of the standing orders, to reflect, to discuss, to express concerns, anxieties, howsoever defined. But, Mr. Speaker, I also think that we have to look to the future and examine the process itself, including the actual presentation of the estimates. And it is a matter that we need to think about and possibly put together a team to review the entire process so that the parliamentary approach to this issue can be strengthened and can be enhanced in the finest traditions of democracy that we have shaped in this House. But, Mr. Speaker, procedure or no procedure, budget debates should be exciting, biting even, and challenging. And inevitably, in the course of a debate, tempers will flare. There will be strong statements on either side. And it is part of that process that inevitably creates an environment for very sharp debate, sharp disagreement. But I'm also heartened by the fact that notwithstanding the sharpness of that debate, honorable members could continue to find time to engage in parliamentary ping-pong of one kind or another. And how well have I seen maturity on both sides where this issue is concerned. But beyond all of that, a budget debate is an opportunity for new thinking. It is a time to reflect on government policy. It is a time also to share with government how policy should be shaped and what directions policy should embrace. But quite apart, Mr. Speaker, from new thinking, every member of this House is aware that the period of parliamentary tenure is coming to an end. That somewhere between now and the next 18 months, some general election will have to be called to determine whether members will be given the opportunity to return to this House. What, Mr. Speaker? With 18 months to go, it is an opportunity to allow that new thinking to emerge. It is an opportunity to tease the electorate with new ideas, to say to the electorate what it is that you're hoping to present to them to win their confidence in your bid, either to be re-elected or in your bid to encourage others to be re-elected. And this is my fundamental problem with this process, with this debate here in the past 2 days. Apart from the attempts by the member from Denry North, or for that matter, from Miku South. There was little evidence of any attempt to convince government that reconsideration ought to be given to policies or to tease the government with new policies. In other words, There is a very real danger, Mr. Speaker, that by our very actions, our very statements, our very approaches, the debate, the exercise can become an exercise of boredom. Because what sense it is to hear a member year in, year out, with the same argument, presented with the same set of statistics, albeit showing varying levels of buoyancy, but the interpretation is the same. Maybe I should explain what I'm getting at. I'm looking at Hansard. April 22nd, 2004. And listen to the member for Miku North. Listen to the member for Miku North. He's caught with the problem of explaining growth in the various sectors of the economy. He turns to tourism and he says, then again you ask yourself, who are the owners of the hotels? They are predominantly expatriate and all-inclusive. So that we now know that no matter what CSME means, but sure to happen to be a Jamaican national is, in his eyes, an expatriate. So right away, Mr. Speaker, we understand the implications of growth within that sector. Mr. Speaker, he says, I am not trying to take away from the growth in that sector. What I am saying is that it is being overemphasized. So you have a Jamaican national who happens to own a significant portion of the hotel industry in this country. We have an impending CSME. He now becomes a problem because he's at the center of growth within the whole hotel sector. Then he says he goes to the wholesale and retail sectors. Mr. Speaker, what is clear also within the wholesale and retail sectors? That is clear, he says, also within the wholesale and retail sectors. Growth by 7.8%, but again, who are the real beneficiaries of growth within that sector? I recall Her Excellency saying in her throne speech, Mr. Speaker, we are witnessing the breakdown of traditional hegemony. Is there a creation of a new hegemony? A creation, Mr. Speaker, and we all know who are the magnets behind the wholesale and retail trade, because alliance and mergers are being formed.
So true, we should resist.
Now,
order.
Absolutely, absolutely, member for Grosley.
Order.
What we should have done, basically, is to take this and replay the tape last year for this year's budget speech. Because the same music, and if you think, and pretend to it like that, that's the style. That is the style. The Borghi syndrome all over again. And if you think, that's why Borghi needs, he needs a new writer, Mr. Speaker. Now, listen again, Mr. Speaker. He says, I am not, then he says, Mr. Speaker, again, look at the growth in communications, 4.5%. Now, Mr. Speaker, who are the beneficiaries? I am not trying to decry, he says, foreign investment, but we have, he says, to speak objectively. What he is now saying and shouting out is the truth. Is the truth. These are expatriate multinationals, given the recent liberalization of telecommunications. Now, that's my problem. SOS, that is my fundamental problem, because this parliament, this chamber, ought not to be robbed of new ideas and new thinking. This is what a budget debate is all about. But what worries me with a member for Miku South, or Miku North rather, is a general trajectory of his thinking and that of someone whom he has disowned in the past with a certain venom, a certain anger. Listen to this statement here. A politician attacking and criticizing government because the government says there's a 3.6% growth in the economy. And you wonder. The politician says, and I'll tell you who he is in a while, Economic growth is not the US million-dollar homes that cap. So he concedes there is economic growth, but he says it's not the million-dollar homes that cap, which distorts the statistics, nor it is the high profits made by foreigners speculating in us. Now I understand why the color of his tie is becoming increasingly yellow. Because the thinking of the honorable member from Miku South is beginning to approximate very closely the thinking of the new leader of the United Workers Party. They seem to be walking the same road, now sleeping in the same bed.
He's afraid of company, turning yellow.
When the honorable member now seeks intellectual sanctuary in this kind of dogma, then you have to be worried because he's robbing the people of Miku South of creativity. Miku North, rather, of creativity, energy, leadership, and intellectual direction. But the member says that a minister of finance is cunningly presenting statistics. He's used statistics cunningly.
Yeah.
But I would say this, he has to be the mastermind of misinformation, Mr. Speaker.
Yeah, true, true, yeah.
I have never seen a member of parliament who is so skillful at misinterpreting information as the member from Miku North. Let me give you an example.
Honorable member from Miku North, may I remind you of Standing Order 34? A member shall not interrupt another member except by raising up to a point of order,
yes,
which you are not doing, to elucidate some matter raised by that member in the course of his speech, which you are not doing. Please continue, Honorable Minister of Finance.
Mr. Speaker, I hope he can calm down because this is just a little tip of the iceberg. He needs to settle down. Let us take, for example, his GDP figures. He announces to the chamber that his government has flouted all the benchmarks of the ECCB. Debt to GDP ratio, overall balance to GDP, debt service to current revenue, current balance to GDP, and then he goes on to say, selecting debt to GDP ratio, and says that the government of Sintusha has reached the ECCB's debt to GDP ratio. Now, the member needs to do a little more reading. There are times I think he even needs to listen to the conversation to the nation to understand basic economic phenomena. And I'll tell you why you should listen to it. The honorable member for Miku North does not understand that debt to GDP ratio is measured in two different ways. In the case of the ECCB, ECCB only establishes a benchmark for central government debt. And central government debt excludes, for example, debts of your statutory boards, your statutory body, let us say Cricket World Cup Solution. But the IMF, on the other hand, puts everything, that is why, for every country in the Caribbean, you will find that the debt-to-GDP ratio of the IMF is always higher than debt-to-GDP ratio based solely on central government debt. Now, the member from Miku North says, using the ECCB benchmark, that the debt to GDP ratio is 69%. In actual fact, it is 57.2%, well within the ECCB benchmark, provided that you use central government. And so he is confusing the two, does not quite understand what tool of measurement that he is utilizing. Don't let me embarrass you. Don't let me embarrass you further. Now, if you're going to use ECCB benchmark Follow it through. Follow it through to his logical conclusion. But that's not the only problem with him. Every member of this house heard him say that under the agricultural incentive scheme that the government has introduced, the government is saying that only persons who are prepared to spend $100,000 will qualify for incentives. He asked rhetorically, how could they conceivably qualify when nobody is earning $100,000 in the industry? Again, misinformation. Because what the Minister of Finance made clear is this. Sure. Speaker, I'm not going to conduct a roll call and ask every member here to say what the Honourable Member for Mikunov said. I'm not interested in that, because every single member around this table heard him and knew what he said. I repeat, what the Minister of Finance made clear is this, that any individual applying for concessions up to a value of $100,000, those individuals will have their applications considered by an in-house committee rather than those applications going to the Cabinet of Ministers. And I was very clear that if the incentives go beyond the $100,000, then it becomes a matter for the Cabinet of Ministers. Likewise, pork production. I invited the Honourable Member to read the entire paragraph, in the Economic Review, and drew his attention to page 38. He latched on to the first limb. While pork production fell by 4.2% to 92.4 tons, and he rested there as evidence that pork production had declined substantially, I invited him to read the rest, which says, it is contended that pork production is highly underestimated, and it is believed that production increased in 2004, but was absorbed outside of the retail sector. But the Honourable Member rests solely on that first limb, despite my invitation to him to proceed further and read the rest.
Mr. Speaker, sir, on the point of order.
Have it again.
On the point of order, Mr. Speaker, sir. The point that I made was that on the basis of the verifiable data which was utilized for the compilation of the Social and Economic Review, the figures showed that there was a decline in pork by 4.2%. And therefore, the increase that the Honourable Prime Minister attributed to Pork City was not verifiable because it was not utilized, it did not come from the official database, and therefore could not be used as a basis for the projection in terms of an increase. That is the point.
Again, Mr. Speaker, I will not bother to ask for a roll call, neither would I bother to ask every member to state to you, sir, what the Honourable Member for Mikunov said. I am coming so straight at you that you can't even admit where you engage in conscious misinformation. You can't do that. You cannot do that. Now, Mr. Speaker, quite apart from that, Yorker, there are broader issues raised by the opposition which I do believe merit consideration. Although, of course, one hurts you as I indicate by a suggestion. Every member rightly expressed concern about the decline in retail sales for agricultural produce.
the evidence was clear. What was not clear, however, were the real reasons for that decline. Although the statement was touched in the budget address, and there can be no doubt that there was a decline in purchases by hotels as well as a decline in purchases by supermarkets. I don't think that is an issue to be contested. But there are two factors I think all of us need to take into consideration. The first is that there was an acute shortage of local production towards the end of last year. You could not have got a pound of locally produced tomatoes anywhere in Situsha because of exorbitant rainfall. The same thing happened with other produce. And it is interesting, Mr. Speaker, that if you compare the rainfall figures between last year and previous years in Situsha, you will see the dramatic increase in the amount of rainfall that we had last year. In 1994, for example, it was 57,735.4 millimeters, 51,813.4 millimeters in 1995, 1996, 56.97 millimeters, 1997, 44,593.5, 1998, 39,936.2, 1999, 51,024.4, 2033, 535.6, 2001, 26,529.3, 2002, 36,946.4, 2003, 34,001.4, and 2004, 58,817.5. In other words, Mr. Speaker, the rainfall we had in 2004 was the highest recorded rainfall in 11 years in Situsha. That is one reason why you could not have got certain vegetables in Situsha at that point. But there's also an issue that I think we have to resolve internally by more technical advice to our farmers, particularly in the usage of their greenhouses. I think everyone is aware that in agricultural production, unless you can manage the seasonality of your crops, you're going to get into serious trouble. That is why over the last few years, the Ministry of Agriculture has been encouraging farmers to turn to greenhouses to allow them to manage the timing and the amount of water that is delivered to crops. For some strange reason, a lot of farmers engage in removing the covering of their greenhouses during the rainy season, believe it or not. Because of hurricanes, sometimes because of other damage, so that in effect, that defeats the entire purpose of establishing your greenhouse in the first place, because you need to provide a protective environmental source for the production of certain crops, particularly tomatoes. And so, Mr. Speaker, I think that this is an issue that we need to look at, but I also want to make the point that as the agricultural sector changes and move into new crops, our Ministry of Agriculture will have to do even greater work to ensure that there is proper post-harvest facilities. Take, for example, two important crops such as broccoli and cauliflower, in high demand from the hotel sector. Stressed nowadays as health foods. But there are special procedures for broccoli and for cauliflower when they're harvested. It is very important to remove field heat from these crops immediately when they're harvested, which means, therefore, that you have to move to preserve their freshness as quickly as possible to entice hotels and others to purchase. That is why those post-harvest facilities are absolutely critical. I had a member from Bhikkhu South on the marketing board, and he's right. We debated, Bhikkhu South, we debated the future of the marketing board on another occasion when we thought, on a point of order, what is Speaker's order? The Honourable Prime Minister sought to explain the decline in purchases of non-traditional crops to the hotels and to the supermarkets and gave us two reasons, Mr. Speaker, sir. I'm getting to the point of order. He gave us two reasons, rainfall and other technical matters concerning greenhouses. Mr. Speaker, sir, I say he is Mr. in the House, page 7 of the Social and Economic Review gives us a reason. A reason, page 7 of the Social and Economic Review, which details clearly that as a result of the two major supermarkets being merged, it allowed the new entity to source cheaper produce from overseas. That is the point that I've made consistently, Mr. Speaker, sir.
Does your point refer to procedure, and does it relate to the business before the House at the moment?
It refers to the business before the House at the moment.
Does it refer to procedure? No, Honourable Member, it does not. Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you. And furthermore, I'm addressing a point in budgetary statement which the Minister of Finance made. That document is produced by a technician in the Ministry of Finance. It's not a Minister of Finance document. So what you engage in is nonsense. Now, so we come to the marketing board. And a member from Bhikkhu South quite rightly points out, that the marketing board is going through certain difficulties at this time. In fact, we had the opportunity to debate the future of the marketing board some time ago when provision was made for a guarantee for the marketing board. But the member is right that the marketing board has outstanding liabilities, and these are not liabilities that were incurred yesterday, but liabilities that have been in existence for years. But I want to assure the member for Bhikkhu South that the government of St. Lucia will intervene and seek to resolve those liabilities in due course. It takes me, Mr. Speaker, to perhaps explaining some of the issues raised by members in the course of their presentation. One, I think, pertains to the question of shifting GDP figures. In fact, Mr. Speaker, one member expressed concern about the use of what was described as provisional or projected figures, particularly in respect to GDP. Let me explain, Mr. Speaker, that if you check every economic review produced for every year in St. Lucia going way back, you will notice that inevitably it contains projected figures as well as figures that, quite apart from being projected, figures that are estimates of growth, etc. The reason for that is actually quite simple. The figures are produced by the Statistics Department of the Government of St. Lucia. And inevitably, all the information may not be available at the specific time of compilation. So, for example, you will get projections. That is why, if you check the economic review for any year, you will see that you have had projected figures in 1 year, and several years later, sometimes 2 years later, then you get the real estimate of what the actual pattern is. Now, just by way of clarification, let me indicate that there is a worldwide convention established by joint collaborations of all countries collaborating on issues of economic performance. A convention has been agreed without change since 1993 by the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, United Nations, Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, and the Commission of the European Communities in a manual titled System of National Accounts. So when you see those figures are produced in St. Lucia, they are produced on the basis of that document, which is the authority on figures. That is why, Mr. Speaker, as I indicated, when you're looking at economic performance, you're looking at performance based on sectors. Some of the performance is evaluated by surveys. A classic case point is construction. I indicated that construction in St. Lucia probably expanded somewhere by 0.4%. There are people in St. Lucia, including persons who are engineers and persons in the construction field, who will tell you that figure has to be wrong. Because it doesn't measure up to the importation in the country, neither does it measure up in terms of the new buildings and new properties that have been constructed throughout St. Lucia. But the harsh reality is that that figure is largely assessed based on the importation of cement and based on the number of approvals given by the BCA in which one year highly unscientific in that particular case. So that is why sometimes you will get these projections and that you will get estimates in particular sectors when you are compiling these figures. Mr. Speaker, quite apart from that, some valid questions were raised in respect of the Ministry of Social Transformation, Culture and Local Government. One question was, and it was a very sensible question, correct question, why is it that wages exceed funding for personal emoluments? And what's the difference? Normally the term personal emoluments is applied in respect of persons who hold offices appointed by the Public Service Commission. Bona fide public officers. We speak of personal emoluments. The reason why wages in respect of the Ministry of Social Transformation is much higher than personal emoluments is this. The Ministry of Social Transformation has a very small core permanent staff. On the other hand, it has a huge wages bill because it is responsible for the payment of salaries for persons in the village and town councils throughout the country. That's all there is to it. That is why, Mr. Speaker, you will see this difference in respect of wages and personal emoluments. In the case of personal emoluments, lower because they have a smaller core staff, but wages higher because their staff is strewn around the country in respect of their other towns and councils. Likewise, the question was asked about the reduction in the Ministry of Social Transformation, Culture and Local Government funding, and there is to a very simple explanation. Inevitably, when you're dealing with revised estimates, you're compiling it, you're also talking about funds transferred from other agencies, handled, for example, funds handled by other ministries. And a classic case in point occurred with the Ministry of Social Transformation. That ministry historically paid for certain electrical usage in towns and communities. The Ministry of Communications and Works paid for the lighting of highways, etc. We therefore decided to stop this duality, introduce greater efficiency, and I authorize the centralization of the payment of all expenditure to Lucilec to the Ministry of Communications and Works. In other words, you had to shift that amount from that vote across to Communications and Works. Questions were also raised about the forensic lab, and I wish to assure honorable members that good progress is being made in the establishment of the forensic lab. The delay had been largely because the existing building had to be evaluated designs had to be put into place, and apparently additional expenditure than that voted was required. But I'm pleased to inform honorable members that those designs are now completed, and I expect that invitations for tender will be issued very soon so that the forensic lab would be constructed in the course of the of this financial year, very early this financial year. One other question that was raised, Mr. Speaker, concerned the expenditure in respect of crime. And I'm really very pleased to provide that kind of expenditure, Mr. Speaker. I have to say that by definition, you need to state precisely what you mean when you say expenditure on crime. Whether, for example, it includes wages, salaries, whether it includes program administration, whether it includes operational CID, SSU, whether it includes the training of officers. But it includes everything. Here are the statistics. In 2001-2002, the actual expenditure of both recurrent and capital was $25,167,734. That climbed in 2002-2003 to $25,499,860. In 2003-2004, it climbed to $27,167,822. Then in 2004-2005, it climbed to $34,014,810. And then in 2005-2006, it is climbing to $40,622,996. In other words, in respect of the effort to fight crime, there has been at least a $12 to $15 million increase. From $25,167,734 in 2001-2002 to $40,622,996 in 2005-2006. Now, Mr. Speaker, in this debate.
On a point of order, I believe that this document ought to be made a document to the House because I would appreciate having an opportunity now to peruse this document. Thank you.
That's for the record, that's not a point of order, Mr. Speaker. And the standing orders do provide it up to the member to make it a document of the House. But I'm delighted, and the honorable member may have it as a document of the House, and certainly the clerk can have it. That also brings me to another point. We had a little skirmishes. You have to give everybody. We had the little skirmishes, the little issues about crime. And this House must be provided with another opportunity to debate crime. On the conclusion of this budget debate, at a subsequent meeting of the House will have the opportunity to look at the Crime Commission report. And we are going to make sure that there is a full resolution to give this House an opportunity to debate crime. Then we shall see who has proposals to deal with crime and who are proposals that are not viable proposals. Put everybody to the test. Put everybody to the test. So that document will be in this House that will give everyone an opportunity to have their say on crime. And let us hear the proposal. But meanwhile, let me issue a little caution. Let me issue a little caution. You see this issue of crime? Politicians must be careful how they handle this issue of crime. Politicians must be very careful how they handle this issue of crime. And when they're handling this issue of crime, they must be sure that they themselves have not engaged in any activity which taints their credentials when it comes to the issue of crime. I'm leaving it right there, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to say no more. I am leaving it right there, Mr. Speaker. I am not saying anymore. Anymore. But if you want to go below the belt, I can go there too. I can go below the belt if that's where you want me to go. But I will leave it for the time being. I will leave it for the time being, and I'll give you the chance to speak. Mr. Speaker, there is one other matter which I believe that honorable members raised, and they're quite right to have raised it. That is the issue of no figures on unemployment in the economic review. That's a fact. And if you check previous records of economic review, you will find in some years it's included, some years it's not included. But of course, people like authoritative sources. And they probably would believe far more in a source like the IMF rather than our own statistical department. And those who want to find out, get an authoritative source. The latest IMF Article 4 survey of St. Lucia, done about a year ago, indicates that the unemployment rate in St. Lucia was somewhere 17 to 18%. Go and get it on the net. You should by now know how to use the net. Because you should know by now that all IMF reports are published on the net, and you can get it on the net. As a matter of fact, that's what transparency is all about. Because under the European regime, you would have never seen it.
Honorable member.
Never seen it.
It would not.
Ah, come on. You know how to use the net, so you don't have to bother.
Member for Mikulov.
So
I remind Honorable Prime Minister Hammond.
Sure.
May I remind you of Standing Order 43, Sub Order 4. If a member shows disregard for the authority of the chair or abuses the rules of the House by persistently and willfully obstructing the business of the House or otherwise, the Speaker shall direct the attention of the House to the incident mentioning by name the member concerned. The Speaker then shall call upon the Minister to move that the member for so-and-so be suspended from the service of the House, and the Speaker shall forthwith put the question, no seconder being required and no amendment, adjournment or debate being allowed. Honorable Member for Mikunov, please do not force this section to come alive. Please proceed, Honorable
Minister. Speaker, I'm relieved by your ruling because I really would not have wanted to take that route with the member for Miku North. That would have been most unfortunate. And I'm really relieved that you did not issue an invitation to proceed in accordance with the standing order. Now, Mr. Speaker, the final thing that I want to touch on is this issue of fuel prices. And I think it's an issue that we all really have to reflect on in the coming months. It is true that in this budget, fuel prices were not increased. But it's going to be very important that we constantly monitor what is happening in the marketplace. It's going to be critical that we follow closely the movements in prices. As we follow the movements in prices, it is also important to note and to remind institutions that they do not pay vehicle licenses as part of the bargain for fuel prices. In that situation, St. Lucia and Trinidad stand alone. Not so in respect of other countries. But just for public information, it is useful to share with members the prices throughout the Caribbean at this time. On January 1st, 2001, in Anguilla, unleaded gasoline per gallon was $7.59. By September the 4th this year, it stood at $8.80. In Antigua and Barbuda, in August 2000, It was $6.85. By November the 6th this year, $8.30. In Dominica, on 1st February 2003, it was $7.98. It is now $9.34 a gallon. Grenada, there was $7.95 at 7th July 2000. 1st May 2005, they're $8.50. Montserrat, 1st January 2001, $6.50. 1st July 2004, $7.90. St. Kitts and Nevis, 15th July 2000, $6.60. It is now climbed on the 22nd of February 2005, $8.30. St. Lucia, 1st July 97, $6.50, now 24th, now, as of now, $8.50. St. Vincent and the Grenadines, 1st July 2001, $6.75, is now $8. Barbados, 1st July 2001, $9.02, it is now $12.89 a dollar. You see, $9.02 is now $12.89 a gallon. This is very serious. And there are times that I fear that we do not grasp the consequence of this. When members of the opposition complain, for example, about the price of fertilizer, and the government responds that duties have been removed, the fact of the matter is that you can't control neither production costs or shipping costs. The thing has frightening implications for tourism. Frightening. Because of the cost of fuel, airlines everywhere are under immense pressure. Mergers are now commonplace. And airlines who can't survive, can't attract mergers, are simply going under, whether it is in Europe or it is in the United States. But more than that, there are the implications for fuel. It is true that our power plants have fuel-efficient engines, but the harsh reality is that they have to pay for that fuel in the marketplace. So we have every reason to be concerned, but we need to see this issue beyond our own situation. By that I mean, it is an issue that affects all developing countries. And the tragedy of the occasion is that there is no voice speaking for the developing countries on this issue. We feel to some extent that we are compromised. There is Trinidad and Tobago, our neighbor. And we possibly feel that to criticize developing countries, to criticize OPEC, would by implication mean that we are criticizing Trinidad and Tobago or criticizing Venezuela. But we can't allow our economies to bleed the way that they are now bleeding because of this problem of fuel. And so, Mr. Speaker, no matter how positive the future looks, we have constantly to bear in mind that progress can be negatived by increases and significant increases in the price of fuel. It is a serious issue because it is one commodity that affects the cost of production, the cost of export, and the delivery of services across the world. It is for that reason, therefore, that I want to urge honorable members to keep the situation constantly under review. Mr. Speaker, there is really not much to respond to, as I indicated. I have tried to be as cooperative as ever to provide answers to the issues raised by honorable members, and I really need to go no further but to bring this debate to a closure by thanking my own staff for the work that they have done this past year. I want to thank, first of all, the staff of the Ministry of Finance for their dedication, their support, their loyalty, their encouragement. I want to thank my own colleagues as well for the statements of support issued in the House. I want to thank them too for being facilitators. At our end, we have widened the boundaries of consultation in preparation of the budget by widening the committee that makes some of the key decisions. And I believe, Mr. Speaker, that this has been helpful. No matter how honorable members may feel, whether in the opposition or on the government benches, I want to thank them too for whatever advice that emerged as we chart the course for the future. So, Mr. Speaker, I beg to move that we proceed with the appropriation bill. Thank you.